to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Michael Braun, a man who I've come to know over the years as a serious professional in the space of national security, having served in, well, a whole host of positions, but ultimately as the assistant administrator and chief of operations in the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. These days, he's a managing partner of SGI Global, LLC, and is on the board of advisors of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a very good man on matters in particular involving a really serious threat to the homeland security and that of our people, drug trafficking and the terrorists that are now increasingly engaged in that line of work. Michael, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. I guess I should wish you a happy new year, much in the hope rather than in the prediction.
Yeah, good morning, Frank, and happy new year to you. It's always good to be back.
Yes, indeed. I want to talk about a victory of sorts, I guess, that we've got El Chapo back in custody in Mexico for the moment. First of all, what are the implications of that? And second of all, do you think it'll last long enough to get him up here?
Well, I mean, look, it's a victory and certainly worth one worth being celebrated. But the problem is, you know, he was recaptured, and therein lies the problem. He shouldn't have escaped the first time. He was in Mexico's Supermax prison, their equivalent of our FCI Florence, Colorado facility. You know, it just simply shouldn't have happened. But, you know, with all of that said, you know, 6 months or more worth of very, very hard work between Mexico and the United States, a great deal of intelligence sharing and fusion going on that ultimately led to his recapture. You know, it's yet to be seen whether they're going to extradite him or not, but more about that in a minute. I'm convinced that they will.
What does it mean, if anything, that he's back out of circulation for his Sinaloa cartel, Michael Braun?
Well, listen, I mean, it's times like this that, you know, very powerful drug trafficking cartels like Sinaloa, it's times like this that the government of Mexico, working with the U.S. government, can basically go full court press and cause them to change their tactics, techniques, and procedures, which make them very vulnerable. And if we keep up the pressure on the Sinaloa cartel, within a couple of years, we could totally dismantle it, just like we did with other cartels in Mexico, the Odcali and Medellin cartels. With all that said, Frank, they'll undoubtedly be replaced by another, but you know, this is a mission worth fighting, and you simply can't allow these groups to continue to exist. You can ultimately fight them and get them under more manageable conditions, if you will, just like we have in our country.
Well, speaking of our country, Michael Braun, you've obviously spent a lot of time working on this problem externally. You've also had to have good situational awareness as to what's going on inside the United States. I spoke with a guy who worked with your agency a lot in the Immigration and Naturalization Services business, Michael Cutler, recently, and he talked about basically we now have 50 border states in this nation, whereby these drug traffickers are able to move their products through ports, through land crossings, of course, and also, by air. And how would you characterize the state of play at the moment? I know it's always a dynamic sort of measure-countermeasure business, but are you troubled, Michael, particularly about the emergence, it seems, really in a pronounced way in the past decade or so, I guess, of cartel operations and other drug and gang-related, apparatuses inside the United States?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very worried, Frank. I mean, I left government 7 years ago after 33 years in law enforcement, and I lose sleep over this stuff. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, the Mexican drug trafficking cartels absolutely dominate the drug trade in the United States. Their organizations are far more sophisticated organizationally and operationally than any Middle Eastern terrorist organization. They're broken down into highly compartmentalized in cells and nodes. They are in, you know, somewhere between 300 to over 1,000 cities in the United States, depending on what forecasts you happen to be looking at this week. And what's most troubling to me is when you look at groups like Hezbollah, the IRGC Quds Force, and their growing activities throughout the Western Hemisphere, Latin America, certainly, including Mexico, those guys are not going to recreate the wheel. As they continue to move operatives into the United States, they have to leverage and they exploit the existing smuggling infrastructure along our border. And in so doing, these very powerful global threats, Middle Eastern terrorist groups, as well as powerful drug trafficking cartels out of Mexico, come closer together. And Frank, what that means exactly, I don't know, other than it's not good.
Let me ask you, having spent as much time as you have in Latin America fighting this drug war, Michael Brown, now with SGI Global, but for a long time in the Drug Enforcement Administration, when you hear people talking about the sort of, the conditions in which these guys are able to operate more or less with impunity, Mexico to some extent, but for sure Venezuela and elsewhere, in between the Latin Central American countries. What would your prognosis be if you were advising this president or the next to try to actually make a real difference in the kind of climate in which this problem is getting worse by the day?
Well, it's a great question, Frank, and this is one, we could be talking about 8 hours from now with plenty left to talk about. So let me highlight a few points. First of all, Middle Eastern terrorist organizations, as well as very powerful drug trafficking organizations, rely on the hallmarks of organized crime: corruption, intimidation, and violence to move their agendas forward. If they don't have the ability to corrupt, they simply cannot operate. Therein lies the problem. They have become very, very good at corrupting, throughout much of Latin America. And if they can't pay you off, they're going to turn to intimidation. They'll threaten to kill you and your family. And if that doesn't work, they'll kill your family in front of your very eyes, and then they'll kill you. So it's a very effective means for moving your agendas forward.
That's been called, I guess, the silver or the lead, right? You get it one way or the other.
Yeah, the plato o plomo, right? Silver or lead. And therein lies the heart of the problem, corruption. We've somehow got to get it in check. There's a lot more we could be doing. But more broadly speaking, what concerns me is that shortly after 9/11, 60% of our Department of Defense's detection and monitoring resources left the Western Hemisphere, more specifically left the Latin America area of operation or responsibility, and they moved elsewhere in the world. Some of those resources have trickled back into theater, but we are woefully short of keeping things in check. And you don't have to take my word for that. You can look at the last testimony of the last three or four four-star generals and admirals that were responsible for Southern Command, and they all testified to that very fact.
Michael Brown, this is a subject for another 8 hours of conversation. Let's get reconvened soon, and thank you very much for your time today and for all that you've done for our country over the years. It's really appreciated, and we're really privileged to have a chance to talk with you about it. I hope the rest of you will join us, another 24 hours or so. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.